Bradford's had about 5 minutes to pull that song off because I walked in today and I thought, given the message that I have prepared and what's going on in Houston, that would be the perfect song to precede my message. And oh my word, you have never sounded more beautiful. My goodness. See, just ask. Things happen if you just ask. Whew. So some stuff has happened this week. Good morning. Before I get into the stuff, good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm very happy to be here today. It's been a difficult week for lots of us. Houston is such a big area that many of us know people or have family in that area, and we were touched very personally, very close up, and I'm going to talk to you about that in a minute. But then, in the midst of all the water coming down and the flooding in Houston, we got word that Louise Hay made her transition. So she was 90 or 91 and just a radiant presence right up to the end. And I don't know if you know this, I just wanted to pay tribute to her for a moment because she began as a religious science practitioner. And then she became a minister and is well known by her lovely book, You Can Heal Your Life. I always hear it as, You Can Heal Your Life, which is my impersonation. That is not an impersonation of her. She's such a gentle woman, but it's the way I always hear that title when I see the book. So we just bless her on her next exciting journey because, you know, good things just expand. And I wanted to be able to share that. You know, that book, Love Can Heal Your Life, is based upon her very successful practitioner practice and all of the experiences she accumulated in her early years. So I wanted to certainly mention that because so much else is going on in the news, it would be easy to miss some things. So we know that Houston is not the only place that's experiencing flooding right now. We were issued from our home office, Centers for Spiritual Living, Dr. Ken Gordon issued a response that spoke about let me just read it. Our prayers and treatments go out to all our brothers and sisters in all rain-torn areas on earth, including Bangladesh, Southern Ontario, and especially, of course, the Gulf Coast. And we have one of our spiritual centers is right in the heart of that, and that would be the center that is directed by Dr. Jesse Jennings, whom I quote a lot because I love this man. I think he's a voice of great authority in our movement. And so Dr. Ken reported that everything is well. They have suffered minimal damage as compared to what it could be, but that several of their congregants have been displaced. And we will talk about at the end of before the offering or after the offering, during the offering, I will be giving you, if you're really moved and you want to reach out and help or support in any way, I have some information for you provided by home office as to how we can do that if we want to. But I got a call on Monday or Tuesday night from our beloved Reverend Clyde Goins, and Clyde's sister lives in northern Phoenix, and they thought they were okay. What day do you think it was? Monday night? And Clyde said, I need prayer because I'm freaking out here. This is, now it's hit home. And within a couple hours, everything changed drastically. Would you come up and just share some of your story with us so we can hear it from one of our ministers? And I just noticed that my life changed in following this story with Clyde. Every couple hours, I'd get a call, and it just went from bad to worse. And go ahead, my friend.
Thanks. So it was about Monday night, and I'd been following the news and stuff like that, and I was a little concerned about my sister, but she lives in northern Houston up by the Woodlands, and so I thought she was going to be okay. And about 9 o'clock, she called me, and she was really crying, and she's like, the water's starting to come into our house, and she was really upset, and at this point, because it was coming into her house, now the water was too deep for them to even drive away, because the roads were already flooded, and So anyway, so I talked to her a little bit, just trying to console her, and then I told her, I said, let me call you back. And so at this point, now that it's happening to my sister, who I adore, and her, she was in so much pain, I felt very hopeless, and there was nothing I could do, and I wanted to do something, and I didn't know what to do, and then I started really getting upset. And so the first thing I know what to do is to call your practitioner. And so that's what I did. I called Reverend Karen. And anyway, so we talked. She talked to me, and it's really funny because when you get in that mode of survival, you know, you're not thinking about everything, and just some of the simplest things, you know, what can we do? And so Reverend Karen was asking me some questions, you know, about what is she going to do? Where is she going to go? You know, does she have a plan? And I'm like, I didn't talk to my sister about that, and so. After I talked to Reverend Karen, I said, okay, I'll call you back. So this was like we were going back and forth quite a bit Monday night. So I called my sister back, and, you know, I asked her, I said, okay, so what is your plan? You know, so what are you going to do? And I was trying to be gentle with her because I know that she was really stressed, and she said that she doesn't know. And I said, okay. I said, so where are you? And so we talked about, and she said that she could go up to her neighbor's house. And I said, okay, so I said, I need you to decide right now when you're going to leave your house. I said, you guys talk about it right now while you're okay. Maybe when the floor is flooded, that's when your decision is to leave the house. But you need to make a decision now and stick to it. And then call your neighbors and make sure that you can go and stay with them. And so she did. And then I let her do that. And I waited a little bit. And I called her back. And, you know, then she did call the neighbors and stuff like that. So I got a text about 12 o'clock at night. It'd be 2 o'clock her time, telling me that she had to leave her house because her house started flooding. So they left their house, went up to the neighbor's house, which was up the hill a little ways, and was there. And they were there for just a little while, and then that house started flooding. And so they had to leave that house and go to another house. And then when they went up to that next house, they were there for a while, and that house started flooding. And so by this time, the water was all the way up to the roof of her house at her home. And anyway, so they made the decision, and this is where it gets beautiful, but they made the decision. They called for evacuation, and there were so many boats out there that was just, she couldn't use, it was like a highway of boats, so many people out there trying to help. So they took my sister and her family to the shelter, and she was telling me that they're walking out of the house. She just has a baggie of some of her personal items that she's holding over her head so that way it doesn't get wet, like her cell phone and things like that. And they get to the shelter.
And the water was how high as they were walking?
It was up to her chest as she was, they were leaving the house. But they get to the shelter, and the most beautiful thing is this couple comes in right after she gets there. She hadn't been there more than an hour, and this couple comes in and says, you know, our house is safe. She goes, you know, we want to invite your family back to our house. So they invited my sister's family back. They don't know these people at all, but they invited my sister's family back. You know, they said, you guys can take a shower. We'll feed you, you know, a nice hot meal, and you guys can have some, you know, we have some extra bedrooms you guys can sleep in, so that we don't have to stay in this big shelter. So that was a huge blessing for my sister. And then the second thing that happened that was really beautiful is that she has some friends that live even further north, and they offered their house to my sister. They called her and told her that, you know, that they had evacuated to their kid's house, and they had their house. And so they told my sister that, you know, that your family could stay there. You use the car, use the house like it's your house, and don't even worry about it. And my sister was really struggling with all of this, and I could just hear it in her voice. But as the days were going on, she sounded better, but she was still hurting. And, you know, she told me that even her dog, she has a dachshund, and she said the dog was just rolling all over the carpet and just rubbing into it. You know, the dog
so
felt
happy.
Safe even. So, but it was, it's been a roller coaster ride, and this is how my family is. As soon as the water receded, you know, the day before, she puts an ad out on Facebook and saying, hey, I need help in my neighborhood, you know, my house, if anybody's available that can do this. And she went to the store. She bought all this stuff. And so she had this crew of people, her friends come over, and they're all just helping her, stripped the walls. I mean, they completely emptied the house and stripped all the walls and ripped out all the carpet. They have dishwashing stations to clean all the dishes, and so she's really trying to salvage what she can. I talked to her this morning, and she's just on that tipping edge. You have to be really gentle with her, because you know, if I ask her something about, you know, what she's getting done, she gets mad, you know, because she's in this focus of getting things done, yeah. You know, but if I ask her how she's doing, then she just falls apart. So it's really, you have to be really gentle in what you say. And so the lesson for me is that to be there for her. Mm-hmm. I'm a doer. I like to make things happen. And it's really hard for me to be here and not to be able to help her. And only can just talk to her. So I just ask her to call me every day, and I just talk to her, and just to be the support and just love on her and let her say what she needs to say and just encourage her, but just be. And that, so it's been a really, really tough lesson for me. And so I'm really thankful for Reverend Karen, because she's my rock. Reverend Karen asked me if I'd share my story with you. You know, when it hits home, it's definitely a totally different experience, and so everybody's going through a lot. But again, our value unity. I think it's beautiful how everybody is pulled together to really support Houston right now. So thank you.
Yes, thank you, Clyde. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. So the first time he called me, I was such a good minister. I was like just listening and going, oh, my word. Oh, I can see your concern. And I'm trying to just be a really good minister, like I always talk to you about how we should be gentle with each other and create that place where we can have these conversations. And I got off the phone, and I was kind of like, I was stunned, and it was heavy. But I was really happy that I didn't try and give him a bunch of advice, you know, that I could ask questions and ground him. And then when he called me back and things had gotten worse, I had seen a video on the Washington Post about, and they recommended to all the people, don't, if your house is flooding, don't get stuck in your attic. If you're going to go to the attic, make sure you take an axe. So the second time he calls and he tells me, it's worse. The water's coming up. I said, they need to get an axe. They need to get an axe. And I didn't even know I did it till I got off the phone. So I just want to share a little humor with you so you can see that none of us are equipped to know how to do this well, you know. And I think that the way Clyde can be raw and vulnerable and real, that's it, you know. And can you see him struggling with how to do that with her, you know? And so that's the real stuff. And I didn't want us to miss that for a number of reasons, I think mostly because it impacted me. And the message that I had intended to deliver today, that I have now made a little smaller, is this idea of God and obedience. I wanted to talk about the law, and I wanted to talk today about the exactness of way spiritual law works. It shows up and it works in our life. So the first thing it's important to communicate is that storms happen. There are no guarantees in this life that you're going to buy a piece of property in the perfect spot, and that you're going to be free of all disasters. By the way, John Kruger once told me when he was a part of that Civil Air Patrol, CAP. I can see it on my computer every now and then because he helped me set some stuff up. that this is one of the safest places on the planet to live, right where we are. So I was kind of encouraged to know that because I moved from Southern California and we experienced a lot of earthquakes. So you can have that reassurance. And yet, anything could happen. You know, I love that Ecclesiastes scripture that says, time and unforeseen occurrence befall us all. Then what are you going to do? And what I want to make a point of today is then there is spiritual principle we can anchor ourselves in because there is an obedience in the way that we have relationship with the law. So I came up with the idea because, am I a little too loud? Because I'm probably going to get excited more. There's a relationship we have with the law, and I'm having this idea. I wanted to do this message because I had read this quote from Judge Thomas Troward, and we actually have a Troward class going on right now. But weeks ago, I read this quote and went, that would make a good talk. And this is what Judge Troward says, God is obedient to man as man becomes obedient to God. Man needs God for power, and God needs man as an outlet. So humankind, all of humanity, we benefit from studying about that power and that presence that we call God or spirit or the infinite intelligence of the universe. What, call it whatever you want, it doesn't matter. But spirit also needs us to be that conduit so that those qualities can come through us and exist on the planet. And the easiest way that I think about that is the idea of love. That, you know, there would be no love on the planet if we didn't allow ourselves to be expressions of that divine love. So that's just an illustration of what we're speaking about here. But I love that idea that God needs humankind as an outlet. See, that changes everything for me, to think about it as that's how knitted our relationship is. That's the oneness that we really can't get away from. And yet it is through spiritual study that we come to understand how all of that works in a very practical way. So we are participants in life, and we participate at the level we choose to participate. That's how we are individualized expressions. We all do it uniquely and differently, and we have different calls and different ways we show up. However, there is this perfect pattern, this pattern of perfection that responds to all of life, that is for life, that is supporting life, even in a catastrophe such as this hurricane that just moved through the Gulf. So when we choose to be I like to word it this way, when we choose to be devoted to our spiritual well-being, becomes our well-being, generally speaking, right? So any interest that, whatever reason you showed up here today, there's something in you that's open to that wisdom. Something called you and drew you here today to hear this particular message, and there's something in it. I always say there's a gem for everybody, and your job as you sit in the chair is to capture whatever your little gem is. And then we get to use it in whatever way we want. So spiritual study or spiritual practice, being spiritually devoted for me, means that I recognize that there is that greater power, that there is a way I can live my life. And it begins as I am willing to study and learn about the way spiritual law works. As I learn to begin to understand that just like there are natural physical laws in the universe, there are spiritual laws that are always working, and that's why prayer is so successful. We can tap into it with the slightest intention, and we can find what that pattern where we now, it's almost as though we energetically move at a different level because we're more open to the presence of something that's bigger than we are. Whether you call that wisdom or God is up to you. And each of us is afforded this gorgeous opportunity to individualize it or express it in the way that we desire to express it. So I wanted to use this, by the way, Mark Reed. That reading was, it's like you cheated and looked at my notes. That reading was so right out of my talk. It complements it beautifully. So, and that book is available in the bookstore, Think Your Troubles Away by Ernest Holmes. It's kind of a new release of a very old publication. But I want to talk about that. Mark was reading about the natural, the things that already existed before we knew they existed. And I want to use today the illustration of electricity. Because I think that this, and Holmes used it a lot, that's why you'll hear me talk about it, because I read it frequently. I think that the idea of electricity as a metaphor for spirit and for that power, the way we use that power in our own lives, is a wonderful illustration of power itself, right? We know that electricity has certain principles. There are physical laws that make it work. It's there. It's a God-given gift that's there. And it hasn't been that long. And if you look at the history of humanity, it hasn't been that long that we've been able to use it. But what do we know about it? If you're going to play with electricity, you got to know some basic rules. I don't even mean the electrician that has to study how things work. I mean that I need to know I can't have wet hands when I plug something in the kitchen, right? Because what happens? It's a shocking experience. It's an encounter with electricity that we don't really want to have. So we have to understand how this natural God-given gift of electricity as actual power that we can plug into and use, we have to understand how it works and then comply with those natural laws. We have to be obedient to the natural laws or we pay a consequence, right? In that same way that as we intend to use that power, has to be obedient to our choice to use it. So here's the point. I thought a lot about this week. Here's the thing that really excited me. So we understand there's a general law of electricity that God made. Let's just say the great creator of all things made electricity. Didn't matter whether we got it or not. But God did not make my vacuum cleaner. Right? Now, somebody did invent the vacuum cleaner by tapping into the higher thought that there was a potential there. Can you see why your reading excited me now? There's the potential is always there, but God didn't make my vacuum cleaner, and he didn't make yours either. And but someone discovered how to use the law of electricity, and then, and here's the key point, provided a set of conditions that made it so that electricity can clean my rugs. Okay? So we, by the way we govern our life, the choices we make, we are always setting up the conditions or blocking our awareness of the conditions that are always already there, right? Or waiting for the wisdom to tap into that higher use of the law and the God-given gifts. But here's the interesting part to me. Not only did Mr. Hoover, or whoever created, anybody know who created the vacuum? I didn't have time to Google, I was busy. Mr. Electrolux. Mark said it with such authority. Les Lux sounds like a Batman character, right? Luke's whatever. So Mr. Lux created the conditions conducive for us to have an apparatus. The technology was there. He taps into it by having that open mind and the higher wisdom and all, figures out a way that we can clean our rugs. But I, in my own home, if I value clean floors, I still have to create a condition in my own life to get my floors cleaned. Now, I don't have to do it. I could hire somebody to do it or bribe my kids or my grandkids to do it, right? But I have to create the condition. So the potential is there. We have the power, the electricity. I've got a vacuum. And I still have to then act on all of that. So what happens is, in my house, I don't do it regularly, so it happens like this. It's like, ugh, the floors look awful. Because I don't notice, out of sight, out of mind, so I don't look down much. And every now and then I notice that it would be much more pleasing to me if the floor was pretty, if the floor was clean. And then that gives me the inspiration to go get the vacuum, to plug it into the power, and to use it to create that which I desire. Right? So it's there. All of it is there. And everything we desire has a way and a means, and nothing gets in the way of us having it except ourselves. As long as we align ourselves to that bigger truth that the power is still there, and then we set out with the purest of intentions to change the conditions that we would like to change. There's always a way to do that. So we are using the general laws of life, the natural laws of the universe, to create the conditions that we want to experience in our life. And the law has to be obedient to it. Things go wrong. Right? You know, your plug can get frayed or something, and you got to fix it. So we always have to stay in compliance with the way things work. And this is the truth about the spiritual life. We're always looking for ways to be compliant to that. We study the first four chapters of the Science Mind textbook are all everything you have to know. It's all there in the first four chapters. I'm trying to try not to stretch everything out. But, you know, it's the thing itself, how it works. You got to study how it works. You got to understand that. And then you can study how to use it, to apply it, to actually apply it in your own life. So this is what I want you to take today, is that we, individually, we provide the conditions through which God's creativity moves. Just the way I plug in the vacuum and I turn it on, the electricity now moves and the vacuum can do what its purpose is. It can fulfill its purpose. So we have that relationship. Now, I want to be really clear in how we can use this philosophy in such big events as a storm moving through Texas. Life has been disrupted in this very massive way. And so in order for Clyde's sister and every other soul that lives in that region and is in that recuperating sort of movement now, each and every person is looking for that pattern that will help them restore order to their life. I couldn't even comprehend it. My prayer changed so much from Monday to Tuesday after talking to Clyde. So first my prayers were divine right action and safety for individuals, for all living things, for all the creatures and for peace of mind and for peace of mind for then after I talked to Clyde, my prayer changed to peace of mind for all our loved ones and for all the people here that are worried about their loved ones there. And the prayer just grew and grew and grew. But as I thought about, you know, it's just sad. It's just sad. I'm very choosy what news I watch. And I watched several videos. And on one hand, I'm greatly encouraged to watch the unity. And on the other hand, then you find yourself in the grocery store. I went to get groceries, and I noticed I felt sort of guilty about what I was putting in my cart. Not the normal guilt, like hiding this sugar and stuff. I felt I had a feeling of like, how offensive that I'm standing here in the market and shopping when people would love to have a market to go shop to, or to have something as trivial as planning a meal a week down the road. And then I realized, but that's not a God thing. That guilt is not helping. That sense of guilt, our feelings of sadness that are connected to helplessness, I think Clyde actually used that word, that helplessness that we feel as we watch or as we experience family members going through it does not help the world. So I want to get back to my spiritual practice so that I can get grounded in truth. I can still be sad because I believe it's that sadness that it carves us out so that we can have greater compassion for what's going on. And that becomes an energetic that we send out. I love to, once I catch myself, like, well, what do you want to do with this now, Miss Minister? What are you going to do with this? This is hard. This is a tough one. What are you going to do with this? How are you going to apply principle to this in your own life? And once I recognize that my mind can go in the scary places, all the what ifs, a little too much vicarious imagining is not good for anybody, then I realize that the sacredness is in my willingness to linger for a while in the unknown. You know, don't ask why. Don't ask why, because why doesn't matter. Right now, there's something greater going on. And so I create a sacred space where I can rest in it and feel it, cry if I need to cry, call somebody to support me if I feel like I need support. And that way, I'm not wrestling with it. I'm not doing battle with it. And I become a part of the healing, a part of the way things come back into order. In fact, things will be in a better order. We know this from past experiences. So that sense of helplessness changes. I let go of the guilt, the heaviness, and that sense of helplessness becomes an empowered way of seeing we can be helpful instead of helpless. And then now I feel like I'm strengthened to ask myself, what's mine to do? What am I called to do right here and right now? And then everything changes. Now, I had this weird thought. Because of the phone calls from Clyde and now feeling like it's way more personal than it had been. And I started thinking about the way we always stress that it's vital to recognize what your desires are and to name them and to know that nothing stands between you and your good, and that everything about the givingness of God, the grace of God, is for our good. All of it, 100% of it, is for our good. And I began to think of how we are. I was thinking imagine that those people that are now displaced, that are now trying to save their homes, imagine that 2 weeks ago they were just living normal lives just like we are right now. Imagine that 2 weeks ago there was a woman somewhere, maybe somebody sitting in Reverend Jesse Jennings' community. Their community is about the same size as ours, maybe a little bit bigger. And imagine there was a woman sitting in there and didn't tell a soul, but she was very distraught because her son was going through a scary divorce. And she's dealing with that, and that's what her prayer is about. And then I thought, but what about the someone who just got back from their eye doctor appointment, and they were informed that now they're going to need cataract surgery. It's not time yet. You know how cataracts are. You got to wait till they're ready. But now this person 2 weeks ago was freaking out about what that's going to be like. And because you have a long time to think about it. And 2 weeks ago, there was somebody else who needed dental work, and they didn't know how they were going to pay for the dental work. And then over there in the Unity of Houston, and the huge Michael Gott Center, there was a family planning this great vacation. And all of that is gone now. Do you think that any of those people are concerned about those things? I had this vision of Clyde's sister. I've met her. I know her. Walking chest high in the water with plastic bag with the few possessions they saved. Would she be thinking about any of that? And I was struck so profoundly with the way that tragic things call us to the immediacy of life, that none of that matters. I was thinking who cares? You're walking through water up to your chest. Do you care what's going on in the White House or who tweeted what? You know, I mean, there's just so, your priorities change drastically. Now, that is not to say that all those desires or concerns that those people had, it's not to say that those things don't matter. We do need to pay attention to our desires, and we can use this stuff in our own way, in the way that we relate to how the law works, in setting up the proper conditions so that we can manifest with the least amount of aggravation the good that we desire to have as we're walking through our life. But here's the deal. If I'm walking through chest-high water, I'm very clear what I want. I want to be not doing that. I want peace of mind in my life that everything's going to be okay. I want to know that there's some sense of balance that's going to bring everything back to some kind of normalcy in my neighborhood. So what happens in that type of experience, I've really been thinking about all of this, is that it brings you directly to principle. See, then it's not the stuff, and we're trying to figure out what's attached to the desire, right? It's not hard to figure it out when you know you just want to feel safe. You just want a bed to sleep in now. You're very, very clear. So it takes you directly to principle without all the side things. But here's what I want to say. Those side things are a vital part of our experience on the spiritual path. So, yes, it is absolutely okay to pray that your vacation is going to turn out well, right? What a good thing to ask for prayer for, to know that divine right action is taking place in your vacation. It is a good thing to pray for your prosperity so that you can afford to have your medical care done or whatever you need. It is important to pray for your son's relationship to be resolved, to pray for those things. That is the highest, the spiritual attribute would be love. Can you see there's love, there's prosperity, there's health, there's so many God things here. Because when we pay attention to what our desires are, those become the stepping stones that take us directly to the truth. You know, I try to say that every class I teach. I set up this big formula for prayer, and I really try and give good theory on why and how it works. And then we get done and we look at it, and it's never about the stuff. If you look at the things, you will see that the things represent something divine within you that desires to express in your life so you can have an experience of that, and we say, so that God can have that experience too. So everything changes. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So as I'm watching those videos, I'm thinking, I'm crying those happy tears like, oh, my God, look at how people come together, total strangers. I can't remember who said this, Michael Gott or maybe it was Clyde, but that the people in the boats were just looking for people to help. And so what we know is as we look at that perfect pattern and the way that the natural laws of the universe, look at the way the water now, water is such a good example, right? We always say water will rise to its own level. And so all this water came up and now it's receding, it's going back where it belongs. It's there, you know, where it can be managed. And there's a level, there's a natural rhythm, a harmony, a divine harmony that brings things naturally back to order. So my prayers are like, wow, there has been, there could have been a lot higher number of lives lost. And I know that number will go up, it will increase, but I think they did an incredible job. Michael Gott said on one of his videos that these are bayous. The city is surrounded in bayous, and we're used to getting wet. It's not a big deal. We've flooded before, but we've never been this wet, right? So now all of that has to go back to a better pattern. And so I pray, in my prayer, I'm also grateful that I understand the natural law of compensation, that one thing will compensate for another, and that that balance will be restored, that order will be restored. I found this quote from Dr. Ernest Holmes, and you, those of you who come each week have heard me say it before. It's so perfect for today. When things look worse, that is the supreme moment to demonstrate to ourselves that there are no obstructions to the operation of truth. When things look worse, that's the best time to do this work. And I cannot underestimate the value of that this is so important. This teaching is a gorgeous gift to all of us, because as we come to understand spiritual law, we will know our place no matter what, and we will know that right where we are, no matter what, that God is right there in the middle of it, and that it did not come from God because somebody did something wrong. That's a beautiful thing for us to remember. And the final thing that I really wanted to talk about this morning, but I have pulled out, I'm just going to mention instead, is that I've been following Mitch Horowitz for a while. This is the July issue of the Science of Mind magazine. Who's working in the bookstore today? Would you save immediately one for Reverend Noli? Make sure she gets one. There are five left, and you're welcome. Reverend Noli needs this. There's an article by Mitch Horowitz. He does a column in our magazine. He is not a religious scientist, but he is a strong voice, a well-respected voice in New Thought philosophy. And he's written several really good books that I have enjoyed. In his article in this magazine, he is addressing something that's very, I feel passionate about, and I talk about sometimes in here. I believe that the world is changing and that something is really trying to emerge on this planet that is big change. Something we have a new, whole new way of doing lots of things that's happening right now. It's being revealed to us, and that some of us, leaders and ministers and spiritual-minded people, are being called to be open to what those changes are. And so part of it is being spiritual, but not so religious, yeah? Part of it is about, you know how I've been talking about, we have to create our own personal theology. We have to know what we believe about life and about God and about truth and spiritual principles. Because I can give a message here on Sunday or teach a class, it doesn't mean we are all going to start thinking the same way. And that's the good news. But Mitch Horowitz is sort of daring, and he believes that the biggest problem with New Thought, and religious science is a part of New Thought, that our biggest problem is that we are a feel-good movement. That people come to us sometimes because they like that idea of positive thinking, and that we miss the opportunity to emphasize principle. That there is a way to apply these ideas in our lives, and it doesn't matter what religion you are, we all have equal access to these spiritual laws, and that we can study in this special way, and we can learn things that we're on this planet to learn. So I pulled this one. I do want to read you this one quote from Mitch Horowitz. It is kind of bold, but he says, we need to, and keep in mind he wrote this in July, or it was in the July issue. We need to address tragedy and decline and terminal illnesses and natural disasters. If I'm going through something tragic, please don't you dare come back to me with a slogan. Either think deeply about these issues or bow your head in silence. Isn't that gorgeous? Please don't give me a slogan. If I'm going through something hard, do not tell me it's all good. Please don't tell me the sun will come out tomorrow. Stand with me. Let's feel I just gave this talk last Sunday and I didn't realize the gravity of the storm yet, but let us listen to each other and let us be there to, if you need to cry, then find the friend that will let you cry. But if we keep trying to fix each other, we are watering down what we teach here. We are not teaching a philosophy that says, if you do all of this, you'll get to heaven one day and everything will be fine. We are teaching a philosophy that is practical, a spirituality that can be used and should be used in a regular way. We are more than a feel-good philosophy. We are more than positive thinking. We are about being able to apply these things in our lives. And when we move through difficult things, I'm thinking that a tragedy like this is so gives you a contrast, right? It reminds me of the yin-yang symbol. It gives you the contrast of the black next to the white, the good next to the bad, the hard next to the easy. And I think sometimes that is a more direct route for us to choose to ground ourselves and to personally reconsider what we believe about the meaning of life, and more specifically, about the meaning of our own life. What is the purpose for our own being? So I just want to conclude by saying I think the storm is a beautiful call for us, for all of us, to unite together in a very bold way for good, to take a stand for the good that is unfolding even now. But let us not pretend that something big didn't just happen, because something big just happened. Something difficult just happened. We want to be sensitive to this storm so that we can be sensitive to all the storms that ripple through all of our lives, and that we in that way can be a kinder and a more generous presence with each other. Life always supports us. Life right now is giving us this gorgeous example of this insistence on being. Watch how quickly things change and become reordered or rebuilt or renewed. There will be storms. I can't promise you there won't be. Something very irregular showed up in a weather pattern last week. Let's spare our opinions about all of this while we stand with open hearts for all the people impacted, including ourselves, in our response and the way that we hear the stories, because already there is good to be noticed from all of this. Our vulnerability is very sacred. And I think that this experience is a beautiful example of the way the challenges of life can unite us. So let's unify. Let's embrace each other. Let's keep our hearts open and tender. Hold each other's hands. And let's anchor all of these ideas in the words of prayer right now. So just get comfortable right where you're seated. Take a breath. A holy breath. And as we reflect on all the things we have encountered so far this morning, grab your gem. Hold your truth tenderly in your own hand and feel the love of God. There is a power and a presence. It is greater than we are. It is everywhere present. It is right here, right now. And it is in every life of every person that's been impacted by this storm. It is the same presence and power that is evident in the flight of the bird, in the beauty of the rose. It is the infinite wisdom of all the universe, and it is indeed the perfect order of all things. I feel the love of God within me, and I recognize it as that activity of life. that movement of spirit through all the conditions that we experience. It is the presence of that which is all-knowing, the creator of all things. It is the most incredible power of all the universe. And I know that love is the grandest force of all. And so as we allow ourselves to feel that love, to recognize that it is the presence of God within our own being, we are strengthened. That the tenderness in our hearts that allows us to feel that compassion is expansive. And it ripples out as we allow ourselves to be vulnerable along with those who are saddened, those who have had loss, and those who have lost their lives. We just stand aligned to principle in this most practical way. We recognize that there is a perfect pattern for all of life, and that pattern is being revealed even now, and that pattern is influenced by the power of these words. And so we take our stand boldly, and we believe in life, and we rejoice in witnessing the way that life is insistent on the way that balance is restored, on the way the water knows which way to go as the storm subsides, on the natural physical laws of the universe that reveal to us the spiritual laws of the unknown that we cannot see with our eyes. And yet we know. We know because we have faith, and we stand strong in our faith, and these words evoke something within us, a quickening, a remembering, an absolute knowing that there is good and that it is revealing itself, that there is healing, that all people are being restored to their wholeness yet again, and that they are comforted by the words of this prayer, that there is divine right action. We stand in this truth, and we know that by doing so, we impact our own lives. We shift the pattern of the movement of life in our own experience of living to a higher level, to a greater view, to a broader experience of love. I say thank you, God, for all of this. Thank you. I am so grateful. I am so grateful, and I feel this gratitude moving within. And in that action of the law, I just release these words into that action of the law, knowing that it always responds affirmatively. I give thanks for this. I release this word, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.